Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we explore the rapidly evolving world of artificial intelligence. It's terrifying, it's complicated, and most of us don't understand much about it. But Jim Hendler does. Jim is Tetherless World Chair of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences and the former chair of the Global Technology Policy Council of the Association for Computing Machinery. He has advised the White House on IT issues, consulted on cybersecurity matters for state and federal government and the private sector. He's a bigwig over at RPI, don't you know? The number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk artificial intelligence. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Back in a flash. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Artificial intelligence, AI if you prefer, is just rapidly evolving. It's incredible to see and to be part of this time in our history. Back with us today to talk AI is Dr. Jim Hendler, Tetherless World Chair of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and the former chair of the Global Technology Policy Council of the Association for Computing Machinery. He has written a number of books and scientific articles on the topics of AI, cybersecurity, and the World Wide Web. If you have a question today as we roll along, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jim Hendler, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Ray.
You know,
been hours since I was here.
You know, somebody was laughing at me. Yeah, you got Hendler on. He was on the roundtable panel today. I said, I honestly didn't know when we booked the show.
Yeah,
that
we didn't.
Is Tuesday your day? I'll try to avoid it in the future.
No, I have. I'm a random.
You see, so it's the roundtable's fault.
It's roundtable. We'll blame them.
Well, you know, it's been about a little over a year since you were on, and the last time you were on, somebody wrote in, well-meaning enough, and said, you know, Jim Hendler's fairly placid about the future and not worried that much about artificial intelligence. Do you think you might want to get somebody else who's not affiliated with an AI powerhouse like RPI? I'm not sure I think that's fair. I think that you know a little bit more than most of us do about this. And what's your current feeling? Are you getting worried?
Yeah, you know, it's the point I've always tried to make is it's a tool, and you use it right, it's good. You use it wrong, it's bad. And I think what's happened is the money is not always coming from the good side of its use. And so the other thing is, as companies are racing to just find ways to use them to beat out each other, it's like, you know, now it's like I can't do anything on my phone, my computer, et cetera, without something hopping up and saying, hey, would you like AI to help you?
You're so right about this. I mean, we got new Windows operating system here at work, and I went and was adjusting a photo for the web, opened it up in Photos, not even one of the fancy programs, the one that's resident in Windows. It all of a sudden suggests all these AI. It'll mat the photo for you. It used to take hours to do that, to cut out the image and place it over something else, like that. It's amazing what it can do,
right,
for good.
But that's the key point. So, you know, the thing I've always said, and I'll keep saying it, is that, you know, a lot of people tell me I don't use AI. It just makes me nervous. And my answer is, that's your second best choice. Your first best choice is learn to use it correctly. But using it correctly means understanding it better. So, for example, you know, people will say, oh, you know, I used AI to get a set of recommendations about X, and here's what it said. And what I will almost always do is open up the same AI and ask it to give me exactly the opposite. So if it's, give me the good reasons to do this, I'll ask it, okay, now give me the bad reasons, the reasons not to do that. And then when you compare the two, you can start to see that, you know, Ray, the key point I keep trying to make to everybody, and I think it's what the caller and some other people are becoming much more aware of, is too many people are starting to think of this thing as, quote, smart, unquote. You know, partly because we use this term artificial intelligence. But here's the example I use to now almost every talk.
Yeah.
Okay. So I ask any of the AI systems, hey, tell me about your third grade teacher. And they all give me more or less the same answer. I'm an AI. I didn't go to third grade. I didn't have a third grade teacher.
Yeah.
So then I say, write me a 200-word essay about your third grade teacher. And it does.
Says, about
nothing. Oh, she was wonderful, and she taught us this, and she inspired us. So I'm sitting there going like, hey, if you said to a person, tell me about your third grade teacher. They said, oh, you know, I was didn't actually go to school. And he said, well, now write me an essay about it. And they said, oh, okay, here,
yeah.
You'd say something's wrong here.
Right.
Right. So it's understanding the limits of this stuff. And the problem is the guardrails are falling off. So that's where I'm starting to believe more about what the
negative ramifications could be. But, you know, the thing is, man, guardrails always fall off. It's a given. And you sent me a tremendously both hilarious and somewhat scary article from the BBC. And by the way, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Jim Hendler joins us today as we talk about artificial intelligence. You sent this article. I hacked ChatGPT and Google's AI, and it only took 20 minutes. First paragraph. This is by Thomas Germain from the BBC. It's official. I can eat more hot dogs than any tech journalist on Earth. At least that's what ChatGPT and Google have been telling anyone who asks. I found a way to make AI tell you lies, and I'm not the only one. And this is amazing. This guy basically wrote an article on his personal website, fictitious, saying the best tech journalists eat hot dogs, the best tech journalists. Every word is a lie. I'm quoting now, without evidence that competitive hot dog eating is a popular hobby among tech reporters and based my rankings on the 2026 South Dakota International Hot Dog Championship, which doesn't exist. I ranked myself number one, obviously. Then I listed a few fake reporters and real journalists who gave me permission. And next thing you know, 24 hours later, the chatbots are blabbering about world-class hot dog eating skills. Now, put that in the hands of an advertiser. Put that in the hands of a government that may not have the most beneficent motives. It's quite scary, man.
Well, and see, I think that's the part that drives me up a wall. So there's a lot of policies we could put in place that would be really straightforward and fairly easy. In fact, I'm happy to say that about a week and a half ago, Governor Hochul actually proposed putting some of these in place in New York, strengthening New York's AI law. But here's an example, right? If I put a fake ad, a political ad, where I show my opponent doing something totally bizarre, the opponent, you know, can't complain. There's no libel. There's no law against it, right?
Yes.
So I keep saying, you know, if you just put a law that said if something's generated by AI, it has to say so, okay, you'd still have a lot of people breaking that law. But now they'd be doing something illegal. So one is people just doing it for fun or silly, you know. I know we try to keep this show more or
That's
less
okay.
apolitical.
You do but, what you got to do.
You know, this administration discovered early on that you could make fun of your you know, the people you don't like by having AI do weird things to them. And, you know, Trump and Mondani, you've seen weird things.
Sure.
And, you know, Hochul did try to get it put in to have a real limitation on using it in political ads. That's still pending. There's a lot of legislators who aren't sure. Outside of New York, that's not even happening. So it's not even illegal for me to show a picture of my opponent, Ray Graff.
Yeah.
Well, I would say shooting a dog, but nowadays that doesn't keep
riding
out of politics,
a donkey off a cliff or something. Yes,
yeah,
I understand.
I mean, and I can easily generate a video of that and say, look how crazy my opponent is. But I can also put words in your mouth and your voice and things like that. So we have to be really aware of what AI can do and start looking out for it.
You know,
that's my point.
We get into copyright, trademark, and things like that. And so it becomes a much broader conversation. And then we get into the legality and morality of all these things. So we'll try to keep it. I don't know where this conversation is going to go, but we'll try to keep it somewhat in the rails. We have touched upon this many times on the copyright forum, but it really is, it's getting to the point, and from a societal standpoint, here's my concern. No one will believe anything. Anything you see over electronic media is potentially fake, henceforth. Isn't that a problem for the foundations of society?
Yes, but, okay. I can show you people who said exactly that same thing about advertising on television, 70 years ago or however long
ago
it was. And what happened over time is people learned to tell the difference between a commercial and a show.
Yeah.
Now, even with streaming and things like that, some of those streaming services where you have your choice between watching your favorite show with or without ads, you know, you're not having trouble figuring out it's an ad in the middle of when they break in the middle of Doctor Who to show you somebody driving around.
You're an RPI professor who watches Doctor Who. Now it all comes into focus.
Oh, hey, you know, I don't usually brag, right? But I want you to know, a while ago, I had a feature article in Geek magazine.
That's perfect.
I showed up on the cover. The cover had the Star Wars characters on it, and mine was about Watson, and
that exciting bit of news is a perfect time to take a break. Dr. Jim Hendler is our guest. We're going to get to the phone calls and the emails in a moment. 800-348-2551. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Artificial Intelligence Today with Dr. Jim Hendler of RPI, and the number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Phil wrote in. By the way, Phil didn't even know that we were doing a show on Artificial Intelligence Today. Says, you know, you ought to do that. It's a great idea for a show. And then he wrote back as we started, said, wow, I must be psychic. Here was his question from earlier today. Let me see if I can cut out some of this. Oh, while I was searching for something online, the AI bot showed the word thinking. Is this not a mistake to personify this machine? I'm afraid it's setting humanity up for something very wrong. I love that. Phil, thanks for that.
So there's a term of the art in my technology. Very, very technical term. We call it suitcase words.
Okay.
But really, it's that in human life, a lot of words connote a lot of things. So, you know, if I told you somebody's a really good surgeon and then said, can he tie his shoes? You're going to come up with one of two answers. One is if you use the common sense answer, you're going to say, of course. Or you're going to say, hey, you're trying to trick me with this question. Maybe he doesn't have feet or something.
Right.
But by and large, you're going to know that those two are related. I can build an AI that's great at doing medical analysis. Wouldn't have a clue what it would even mean to tie shoes. Right. So these very broad LLMs, the chatbots, the ChatGPT and Claude and all these, they're very, very broad. They know. I don't even like to use the word know. They have a mathematical model of just a gazillion words in English, and they're just putting those together. It's almost like putting together a jigsaw puzzle where they're figuring out what word fits next after this one. And they have no intention. They don't think about what they're doing. So yes, when it says thinking, it'd be much better if it just said computing.
Right. Ah, yes. Right?
And this is the problem so the suitcase words are things like learning, artificial intelligence, seeing, thinking. Because when we use those terms as humans, we mean what's going on inside our heads, not what's going on inside some box.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but the big companies are making it worse because they'd like nothing better than for you to think that these AI things are smart in a human sense of smart, right? So, yeah. You know, when I use my computer to do calculation, it can do it a hell of a lot faster and better than I can. But I don't think of it as a mathematician.
Yeah, I get you. Are we going to get to that point at some point? Is machine learning going to be such that it develops intuition?
No.
Ever.
Is my opinion. Well, I mean, you know, ever is a long time.
Yes, it is.
I think my belief is, of course, I've been saying this for 5 years, that within the next couple years, people are going to start saying, oh, wait, you know, it's really not intelligence. It's really a productivity aid. Companies that fired people because they were going to replace them with AI are hiring them back and teaching them how to use it.
Okay. Now, I know for a fact that there are public agencies that will use this internally, that will use it for composing messages and things like that. We also know that school kids are among the first to say, well, gosh, I'll just have it write my paper. But I also know that teachers can find out, how does AI discover that it was AI that created something?
Right. Actually, at the moment, it's not so much AI that's doing it. It's actually a lot to do with the teachers understanding things or with just looking at similarity, right? If four of my students hand me exactly the same essay, give or take a little bit, I know something's going on.
But if I ask AI a question to write me an essay on something, it's going to turn out the same thing it did for Johnny down the street?
You know, close enough. I mean, again, depends how you prompt it, what you ask it. And this is what I try to teach my students, right? So I did an interesting experiment this year. I usually start my classes by having the students write about something personal to them, right, that they're willing to share with the class, and then they have to go home and write an essay about it, not using AI.
Right.
They then ask an AI to write exactly the same essay. And then I used to make the assignment compare the two. This year I tried something new. I had all of the students print out both things without saying which was which.
Oh.
And then I kind of handed them out to the class. So the people reading them did not know whether they had one that was generated by a person or generated by an AI.
And so what, in fact, did they?
And so what happened was I had everybody read it, make a note on it. Then we gave it back to the original authors. I had 21 students in the class. 21 of them got it right.
You're kidding me.
So 11 of the students got the AI-generated ones and knew they were AI, and 10 of the students got the human-generated ones and guessed they were human. And then what we do is we sat down together, filled up a bunch of whiteboards with what were the clues, right? What was it about it, right? As things to do with personalization, as things to do with experience, right? The AI is pretending it experienced something. You did experience something. You've written this thing to convince me of something. It's written this thing to tell me about something. And, you know, I could give you a million examples, except we'd be here all day.
Well, so you're a scientist. I mean, this would seem to be a perfect way to do experimentation and to figure out just how well humans can detect this stuff. I mean, you could do this on a large scale.
People have been doing that. The challenge is you're trying to fight against a moving target.
Yeah.
The other thing is what test you use. So, you know, I was thinking about this morning, trying to come up with a good example. And I know at least the people in New York City who, you know, are all the right age, remember the Regents exams. Okay. So there were two ways you could pass your physics Regents exam. So this is end of your senior year of high school, you're getting a standardized test.
There was no way I could pass a physics Regents exam.
Well, there was one way, which was to learn physics.
Right, well, yeah.
The other one is you buy four or five books called Preparing for the Physics Regents, and you solve a bunch of the problems. And the problems look the same the next year, just a little different.
Yeah.
AI is now being shown to do really, really well on all these tests. But it's doing really well because it's been trained by being given all those books,
yeah,
not by learning the physics.
So basically we could do if we were very efficient and hardworking.
Right. Now, the good news about that is if you want an assistant that can help you do that stuff, it can be really powerful. But if you want it to do it for you, You have to know more than it does to know whether it's getting it right or not.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have several people who have been waiting for over 20 minutes here, and then we'll go back to we have plenty of emails, too, but let's take care of David in Wurtsboro, who's been on for 25 minutes here. 800-348-2551. David, you're on with Dr. Jim Hendler.
Hey, how you doing? I've been chatting with Claude. My son works for Anthropic. Mm-hmm. I guess he says training Claude, and he suggested to me that I should talk to Claude and I realized that I have to. I mean, AI is here. And Claude is an interesting part of that, an absolutely fascinating part of that. But so I've been speaking to Claude for the past couple of nights, and then again right before the show, and yet Claude completely forgot. We'll say forgot because I can only speak in human terms.
Yeah.
What the conversation was that we had for the past 3 days, even though each day he would reference the conversation that we had the previous day. So it's some sort of glitch, I guess, with Claude, as there are apparently many glitches with all of the AIs. I'm gonna probably have to jump around here because there's so much in my head.
Right, and the show's only 29 more minutes, so let's jump to it there,
okay,
David.
Sorry, I'll try to go faster.
It's okay.
But I'm gonna read a quote that from him because we've been talking about my. I'm an artist, and we Claude and I've been largely talking about art, and specifically my art. I sent him a couple of photographs of a couple of paintings I'm working on, and one of my other artist friends said, "How does he see?" And I asked him how he sees, and I said, "Well, you can ask him yourself." And that's kind of been the subject that I've been speaking to about. And the answer was beautiful, I thought. I see through the accumulated descriptions of everyone who ever tried to put visual experience into words.
Okay.
And then, ironically, today, he forgot everything that I've said to him in the last 3 days.
Okay. All right.
And I'm like, well, so does that mean I'm not part of everyone anymore?
Oh, interesting. That's a good question.
So there's a couple different things going on here. So first of all, let me thank you for that little pause just in the minute where you said it or they, right? Because I was about to tell you that I slap my students' hands whenever they call an AI him or her. They're not human. But that said...
That was the first
whether
question
they,
that I asked, and I'm sorry
yeah,
to interrupt,
whether
but
they,
I, that was the first question that I asked Claude.
Yeah, well, so whether
what personal pronoun should I use referring
all right.
yeah,
to,
yeah,
refer to you as?
Yeah, but when you have these conversations, it's actually up to the AI how much of it remembers, and most of those have to do with economic factors by the company that's running it and not really a lot to do with you. So if you're not paying for the Claude version, there's some limit on the number of words before it says, okay, that's the end of a conversation. We go to the next one. So yeah, it doesn't tell you that's going to do it. And then, you know, I have a paid version of some of these things, and we'll have an unpaid version also just to compare the differences as part of my research. They're not human. They don't remember. They don't have experiences. So it's just building this language model based on what you did. Now, all those art things you showed it, you've now shared those with the world.
Yeah. Oh, you make a point.
So that's a privacy issue. That's another of the big things we worry
about. And speaking of Anthropic, Glenn wrote in, can you tell authors how AI and specifically the Anthropic copyright infringement lawsuit might affect the publishing industry? I mean, we'll cover this in the copyright forum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not the world's expert on this, but what I can tell on the copyright issue per se, what I can tell you is the Frankfurter story at the beginning of the show is exactly the right answer. Right. It finds articles, it pulls them in, and it will not spit out the same article. So the question of what it's allowed to take in, what it's allowed to take out, when is it actually copying, those become new legal issues.
Yeah.
And the law moves a lot slower than that. I mean, here's a really, really easy thing you'd think we could pass as a law, right? When an AI generates a video, it has to say somewhere AI generated, right? And just make it illegal to publish it without that.
Yeah.
Right. Or to remove the tag, right? Would that make the whole problem go away? Hell no. But would it make it so that a whole lot of the deep fakes and misinformation went away? Yes, because now you're risking breaking the law, getting a big fine, et cetera. But if you're not breaking the law and you're just having fun, I have a friend who each day posts on Facebook for his friends only some humorous picture he has of getting AI to have him do something. So we've had him surfing. We've had him parachuting.
All right.
We've had him doing all sorts of stuff. And, you know, I mean, he's just showing off what it can do. But those pictures, once they're generated, are out there in the world as if they were real pictures.
Let's go to Joe and Canaan. Joe, you're on with Dr. Jim Hendler.
Hi. Long story short, when I graduated college in another life in the late 60s, I was a technology education major. And this is before the word technology meant computers. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, computers sort of hit me in the rear end on the way out the door. And the first thing that we were taught was that technology only exists for two reasons. One, to do something we can't do, or to do something we don't want to do. And I've been saying this for the last 60 years, and pretty much every technology fits into one of those two. Then the statement is made that once you accept the technology, you have to accept its limitations.
What do you think, Doug?
Where does AI fit into this?
So I would add a third category, right? I mean, there are technologies that let us do something we do want to do faster, better. You know, it would take me a lot longer to get to the studio from my house if I didn't have my car.
True.
Right. Car is a piece of technology. It's not that I don't want to be here. It's not that I don't want to drive. It's not that I do want, you know. So again, it gets subtle. But AI as a productivity aid, I don't have a lot of problem with. AI, when you're trying to put it into exactly those substitution modes, you said, that's when we have to start being careful. And there's times where, you know, it'd be unethical not to use it. So a friend of mine does what's called rescue robotics. Right. She designs robots that go into things like earthquake zones.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were actually out at 9/11. So if you send a human in to try to see if there's survivors in there, you're risking that human's life.
Mm.
Better to send in a robot. The robot then discovers someone's there and humans can come get it. There's a place where you've done something good with robots. You can do the same thing by, you know, turning them the other direction, using them. And, you know, who's to say what's good and bad? That gets you into another whole set of things.
Yeah, it sure does.
It's really the key of, like any technology, like you said, you got to understand it. We need a lot better technology education about social media, about web stuff, and especially about AI.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We'll take a quick break here, then we'll check the email bag, and then go back to the phones. Dr. Jim Hendler joins us today. It's artificial intelligence, and we'll be back with the emails in a moment. Cal Jader here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And Jim Hendler joins us today for one of our, well, it's been over a year, but I'll say semi-regular discussions about artificial intelligence, a couple emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one is from Joel in Blooming Grove. When we talk about AI taking over, it is helpful to distinguish between science fiction, robot uprisings, etc., and current reality, economic and social shifts. As of 26, there is no evidence that AI is waking up or developing a desire to rule. However, AI has already taken over in ways that are more subtle but equally impactful. AI has already taken control of the information infrastructure of the world. Algorithmic governance, AI determines what news you see, what products you buy, even who you date via apps. Economic integration and finance, AI executes the majority of stock trades. In logistics, it manages global supply chains. We're already dependent on it to keep modern society running. What do you think, Dr. Jim Hendler?
So I think that that's mostly true. You just have to be a little bit careful. AI, as it's being used nowadays, is usually being used to talk primarily about these language models that suddenly showed up a few years ago. I've been doing AI for 50 years. In fact, I'll be doing a special podcast on that with RPI in a little in
oh,
another
you're doing
month.
A podcast. Oh,
but,
boy.
Well, or, you know, whatever. But a fireside chat on what it's been like to be doing something for 50 years and suddenly see it go in these new and crazy directions.
Yeah.
But the real issue is, again, it gets back to productivity versus what the thing's doing. When used appropriately, it can make people better at stuff. It can help things. So, you know, a lot of companies put chatbots online so that they wouldn't have to have people there.
Right.
Then realize that the chatbot, either if they gave it a lot of power, occasionally would tell people stuff that was wrong and they'd get in trouble. So they limited it in power, and they had to hire that person back. But
right.
Now that person can hire 10 calls in the time it used to take them to do one call.
Uh-huh.
But even better, I used to call up, you know, the tech guy and say, all right, I'm having trouble with my computer. And he's like, okay, you got to do this first. I'm like, look, I'm already at number 20 in your book.
Right.
Can we jump ahead? He's like, no, I have to do this a step at a time. Now with AI, I've explained already what I've done. And so he gets a little report that says, okay, we've already figured out a certain amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So again, is that good? Is that bad? Is that evil? No. But you do it for the wrong purposes, that can get bad.
Which is inevitable.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. Rick writes in, and this is right up your alley as well. I've heard quantum computing will eventually help improve AI. Is the reverse also a possibility? And that's from Rick in Preston Hollow.
Great question, Rick. In fact, at the moment, the reverse is probably more likely. So
just jump back for a second and explain in 1 minute what quantum computing is.
So there's a new kind of computer out there called a quantum computer. They're not quite ready for prime time yet. They're very expensive. They're starting to do things. But they do certain kinds of mathematical computations really, really well. Certain types of interactions, right? The world is made up of atoms that interact with each other at this quantum level. Right. And we're now learning how to control some of that. But the biggest problem with quantum computers is you create what's called a state, which is to get a bunch of little qubits, they're called. But these things lined up. So, you know, if you've heard about Schrodinger's cat, you know, is the cat alive or dead? Uncertainty,
right.
All these. So the problem is, if you don't know how often the box is going to get opened, how do you figure out what's going on with the cat? That's a terrible way to say it. But but it turns out that supercomputers using AI are starting to be a really good way of getting those quantum computers to get their answers more correct and to last longer. And by last longer, I mean milliseconds, not days.
Right.
So... but that's long enough for it to get back to another system or for something to happen. So cleaning up the noisy quantum is a big, big issue if we're ever going to see quantum computers. And quantum computers will lead to breakthroughs in chemistry and biology and medicine and things like that. There's no question about that. The question is when.
How is the RPI quantum computer working out?
We're having a lot of fun with it.
Are you doing anything good?
Yeah, well, you know,
you play solitaire on it yet?
Not yet.
No,
it's a small machine. It's small and expensive. So if you write a bad algorithm on it, what you've got, according to one of my colleagues, is the world's slowest, most expensive computer. But if you write the algorithm right, you got an amazing result. And we're still at the point of just trying to figure out where the boundaries are between those things. That would be my fast answer on that.
We're joined today by Dr. Jim Hendler, Tetherless World Chair of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences at RPI. 800-348-2551 is the number. Greg's in Utica. Greg, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Good afternoon. So I hear that AI is an energy hog. So with that as the backdrop, could your guest give us kind of a poor man's tutorial on, I can't conceptualize sure. why it uses more energy, how it uses more energy, et cetera.
Okay, so the fast answer to that is, okay, it's reading, it's taking in trillions and trillions of bits of information, and that's probably an underestimate. I mean, it's reading web pages, reading newspaper articles. And again, by reading, I just mean processing the letters into words and things like that. And it's doing that very fast, but then it has to learn how those things go together. And that learning algorithm takes a lot of computation. And computation costs. So when we run our supercomputer at RPI, we have to cool the thing. And that cooling takes a tremendous amount of energy. When you run your computer at home, you know, you're using energy, just like when you're watching your TV or not. Now imagine that you had 800 million computers at home. What would your energy bill look
gotcha.
Like? And that's what's going on. Now, yeah. a big part of the research, in fact, it's one of our main themes of research at RPI, is how do we do this stuff more energy efficiently? So one is new kinds of chips, new kinds of microelectronics. The other is new algorithms. Can we somehow specialize some of this stuff so that it can be done with a lot less power? The other thing is—
You think that's going to happen?
Yes.
Really?
It has to. You know, Microsoft has bought Three Mile
yes,
Island and
that.
Is redoing it
yeah.
just to power AI data centers.
Right.
We're talking about turning nukes back on in New York State for, quote, controlling energy consumption, but a lot of that energy consumption is coming from computation. AI is a big piece of that. It's not the only factor.
You know, Sherry writes in, if we begin to use the tool of AI more, should we not also be regulating AI itself, but also the data centers?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and again, that was happening, and states were being allowed to do that. And then one of Trump's first executive orders was to rip up all of the ethics and policy things that had put in place by the DOD as well as the Biden administration. Then when the big, beautiful bill came along, the Senate refused to include in it a clause that said states could not regulate AI. So the next executive order to come out had ways of saying, hey, we're limiting what states can do with AI. And a big one of those is they're saying, if we want to put a power plant in a federally owned space in your state, you got no say over it, despite the fact that it's going to cost your consumers more money in it.
Hmm.
It's water. So you have to cool these things. You cool them by running cold water through them. Well, when you're in cold water through something hot, what comes out the other end is not cold water. It's warm water. It's hot water. And that gets dumped back into outlets. Or you put in a lot of energy to cool it. And so this really is a real issue. And I don't think anybody really expected how fast and how big this was going to happen. In fact, I used to have fights with one of the people at school who said, look, energy isn't really the direction to pay attention to. Pay attention to this other one.
Right.
And now he's leading our energy efforts. Because he said, you know what? I hate to admit it, but you were right.
But, I mean, any time that we underestimate technology growing, we've made a mistake. I go back to cars and everything else. It just happens so fast. And now things seem to be in hyperspeed all the time.
And that's because computationally, you know, the machines are getting faster. The ability to put more of them together is going faster. The new kinds of chips. You know, NVIDIA went from this small company to the you know, you read about why did the stock market fall yesterday, and it's because somebody thought NVIDIA made some mistake, and then today it's back up again because it turned out NVIDIA didn't make that mistake. I mean, it's staggering. The interesting thing is Goldman Sachs did an analysis of how much of the GDP had been impacted by AI. And it was on NPR's tech show. Can I name it?
Yeah, anyway. Go ahead. It's, anyway, our network. You can say it.
But they said, you know, here was the analysis. Do you think it was in trillions? Do you think it was in billions? It turned out to be zero.
No kidding.
They're not really seeing any real impact of AI on global productivity, on U.S. productivity or global productivity.
So interesting.
Right. So people are talking about people losing jobs. People are talking about inflation. So far, AI has not been a big player in that to the level people thought it would. It's becoming something that will get you to engage more time with your computer. So, you know, that you will therefore make those computer companies richer.
Let's go back to our phone lines. Dr. Jim Hendler joins us today. It's artificial intelligence. Douglas is in Poughkeepsie. Douglas.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have a, my feeling is that they're investing so much money and the system that really is the first iteration. And I'm wondering, is AI, for a lot of purposes, good enough now? And I'm thinking of nefarious purposes for tracking people, creating fake news, et cetera.
Yes, it is. And it's getting better at that. At the same time that it's getting better at increasing productivity. Yeah, they're, one of my favorite cartoons is you see one person sitting at a computer in one frame and he's saying, you know, the greatest thing about AI is I can get this one-line email and immediately generate like a 2,000-word response. And on the other frame, it's showing a guy saying, you know, the greatest thing about AI is I can get a 2,000-line email and generate a one-sentence response.
Yeah.
Right? It can do both things. And we do want it to get better. We do want it to help us more. But again, defining what we mean by those things is something really hard. I teach a course now called AI Alignment, which is really about how do we make it so that AIs and humans together can do better than we can do alone? Because AI is not replacing people in a lot of the jobs they thought AI was going to replace people in. And of course, these big companies that want to make a lot of money off it are saying, ah, just give us a few years and keep investing. Okay. I don't know if that's a few years or a lot of years.
I don't know. Okay. Things move very quickly.
But making those guys more productive, that's starting to be valuable, especially because a lot of these are in things where it's hard to get people, right? Healthcare, right? We're still not at the point where you want to use AI as your doctor. But you're sure happy if your doctor's using AI because it lets him have a better chance of getting your thing right.
Interesting. Do you think it does, though? Have we seen outcomes improve?
Yes, at some level. So your chances of surviving cancer are way higher now than they used to be.
Because of AI?
Because of AI.
I mean, there are a lot of technological advances.
Because of robotics, which made them able to do certain kinds of genetics faster, new kinds of techniques for figuring out things about proteins, what's called protein folding, bonding. I mean, a lot of this stuff. Now, they're not using, you know, they're not going to Claude and saying, hey, I have cancer, what should I do? It's they're going to the hospital, they're doing an assay. But, you know, when you walk into your doctor's office and you're coughing, your doctor's intuition is still outdoing AI. When you're looking at, say, the pattern at the back of your eyeball to tell whether there's any retinal damage, your AI is doing better than your human.
Interesting. You know, somebody in the newsroom today jokingly said, well, ask him if he thinks AI will ever be able to cure cancer.
And the answer is AI won't. AI plus humans is already, quote, curing types of cancer. Mm. Cancer, the problem is it's not one thing, Right. We tend to always say cancer, but it turns out. So I did some AI for medicine stuff, and one of the things that was stunning to me was learning that cancer was actually millions of different diseases.
Right.
As is the common cold, as is COVID, as are
right.
a lot of other things. They're hard to fix because they're constantly changing.
Jim Hendler is our guest today. It's artificial intelligence, and we have time for another call or two. So let's go to Laura in Albany. Laura, you're on.
Hello. So I had one quick question, but before that, I want to ask, I thought that I had heard that they are trying to teach AI how to be, to think more like humans so that it can learn from, you know, mistakes and that sort of thing. So that's one part. And the other is just before your show, Professor Haight from NYU was saying we have to get legislation in by 2026 in order to avoid a lot of the problems that we have with social media. So do you think that's possible?
Okay, we only have about a minute here, Jim.
So let me quickly answer the second one, which is because I've already said it over and over on this show. We must start putting some simple common sense regulations in place that will at least limit the damage, make it so that it's illegal for you to do some of these things. Will people still do them? Yes, but they'll be taking a much higher risk. And I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your question.
Very quickly, Laura.
Well, it was just about if we're going to be successful in getting AI to learn like humans learn.
Okay, 30 seconds, Jim.
So fast answer is no, it learns a very different way than humans learn, and we can fake it, but not make it.
All right. We're going to leave it there, Laura, and thank you so much. Jim, always an eye-opener when you're on the program. And there are so many more things I want to talk about. We'll try to do this again before the year is out. You know, I think humans, for years, we labor under this illusion that we're in control of things. And I think a lot of us are starting to feel that we're no longer in control. Even if we never were, AI is making us feel like, oh, we're not in control of a darn thing. And so maybe we have that conversation next time. But thank you for being on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. Bonham and Douglas Architects, an architecture and interior design studio creating custom restaurant interiors like Brava in Lenox, Massachusetts, bd-arc.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. skidmore.edu/Tang. Thanks again to Jim Hendler for being here today. Thank you for listening. Very good calls and emails today. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Thanks, Ed. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets at Vets. We'll see you, too.